Okay, welcome to the next edition of the City Lights Bookstore podcast. We're here with Anne Height, and she's going to talk a bit about her writing and her newest book in the Black Mountain series, Sleeping Above Chaos. Hi, Anne.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing good. I hope you are.
I'm doing great.
Great.
I'm in the mountains.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good place to be for sure. So I guess let's first talk about kind of how the series began and what, you know, how has it come to be, and where did you get the idea from?
Well, the first book is Ghost on Black Mountain, and it's set in Black Mountain, North Carolina, except I kind of mess with that a little bit. You know, I take some fiction license and turn it into actual mountain instead of a range of mountains. But it's set there, and the idea pretty much came from my grandmother. I was raised by a woman who was from Appalachia, and I used to listen to all their stories, and ghosts were something that they believed in. Mm-hmm. So they weren't scary like, you know, the horror stuff that we watch on TV and stuff. They were just normal, you know, kind of crawl up your back, you know, creepy kind of thing, and it takes a lot to scare me. And I noticed that there was not a lot of books written about Appalachia that had ghosts in it. Mm-hmm. And so I decided, well, I'm going to do that. I'm just going to try to write the story, and I want it to be a serious story. I want it to be about women, but yet I want the ghosts to play a part in it. Hmm. and be almost characters. And so that's kind of how it started.
Talk more about like that culture of a paranormal element in that culture. Like, what's the background there?
Well, you know, for I can only speak, and it's different with every family in Appalachia, I think, or community especially. Mm-hmm. But they just, it was just a given, you know, it was a given that they believed that you might be visited by someone that had passed on. Mm-hmm. And they very rarely used the word dead. It was passed on, or, you know. And so, give you an example, my great aunt's husband was named Dugan. Don't you love that? Beautiful name, Dugan, and my Uncle Dugan would sit on the front porch every night and watch the sun go down and relax. And so after he died, she swore that if you were there, you would see him. She saw him. He would always be sitting in his chair out there. It was that kind of,
right.
You
so
know,
like family, past family.
Past family. Okay. It could be other stuff, but
right.
Not, you know.
Right, right.
It was always tied to the family. Mm-hmm. And most of my, I had a reader. I love readers because they give me insight into my book books that I don't have. And I had a reader say, "Your ghosts are more like metaphors for the emotions that are presented in the book." And I said, "Oh, I like that. I'm going to use that." I didn't write it that way. I mean,
right.
Thinking about that,
yeah.
But they're more of here they are in the book. They're, and I've had people say they're scary and they can't read my books at night. It takes a lot to scare me, so I don't see them as scary, but a lot of people do. But they're the creepy get in your head kind of,
uh-huh.
I guess, is scary, and we don't get that a lot now.
Huh.
Everything's kind of spelled out to us. So the storytelling that we would do, or I would sit and listen to, because I was supposed to be out playing, but if I was really quiet, you know, they'd forget I was sitting in there and I'd get to hear the real stories. And they would, you know, it was that kind of, you know, that made you think about it. You really didn't think much about it till you got home and got ready to go to bed, and then you start thinking about it, you know. How he just appeared in the kitchen. Well, you know,
yeah.
I don't want to get up and go to the kitchen. So.
So that storytelling part of your family, that I guess I would assume that that's how you became interested in writing.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think that with the combination, I came home from, came back to Marietta, Georgia. My grandmother would say she escaped Appalachia, and she would tell me if she was alive today that I was making way too big of a deal out of it. It was a hard life, and she was glad to be rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
But and she went to Marietta and became a Rosie Riveter for Belle Bomer.
Mm-hmm.
And bought a house and, you know, all that wonderful thing. And my dad was in the Air Force, and we were stationed during the Cold War. I'm telling my age, in the Cold War, near in Germany, near the line, the wall.
Oh, okay.
And so when we came home to live, my mother and father divorced, and it was like culture shock for me because I'd been in the military. It was 1967. You know, I was 10 years old. I was used to somewhat having diversity. Mm-hmm. And I came back in the middle of civil rights, and Marietta was a, especially Atlanta, was full of that kind of stuff going on. And so it was really tough for me. And my grandmother, and we were living with my grandmother, and she just kind of took over. She was a woman who had never, didn't get past the fifth grade. And I'm working on a memoir and she about her, and I'm thinking that she didn't even go to the fifth grade, but she just told me that because she didn't want me to think. Mm-hmm. But she was very, very intelligent, and she knew I loved to read, and so she put Jane Eyre in my hand. I was 10 years old and said, "Read this. This will give you something to do. Read this." And I never questioned whether I was too young to read Jane Eyre, and I read Jane Eyre, and I was so drawn to the mad wife in the book, mm-hmm. that I sat down and wrote my first piece, which was to give a story to the mad wife.
Oh, okay.
Because that was kind of spooky, see?
Yeah.
Because being with my dad and being where we were, I had not been around that storytelling culture of, uh-huh. and the ghosts and that kind of thing, so it was all new, and I took to it. You know, I liked being a little afraid.
Yeah, that's great. Well, tell us a little bit about Sleeping Above Chaos.
Well, Sleeping Above Chaos is my fourth Black Mountain novel, and my novels are all, you can read them in any order. They have some of the same characters, but they don't have to be in a certain order. This one is set, it's the first one I've not set in the Depression, because I normally write about the Depression because my grandmother raised me from 10 on, and I, for a long time, thought maybe I had been raised in the Depression because I heard about it so much and knew so many stories from the Depression. So I really had, it's a comfortable place for me to write, but this one starts at the end of the Depression and the beginning of World War II. Mm. And it's set in a village at the bottom of Black Mountain. And of course, lots takes place on Black Mountain, but it's about a young girl named Ella Ruth Allen and a young man named Buster Wright. And these stories are actually based loosely on my mother-in-law, that she's not alive anymore, but stories that she told me about her and her husband. And which are, you know, at one point there's a story in here about a jail house being pulled down. Mm. And they swore that my father-in-law, who I never met, had pulled it down, tied a cable to the around it. It was just a little shack. Tied it around it, hooked it to the train, and when the train pulled away, it pulled the jail cell over. And he sat up on the water tower across the street and watched it. And that's one of the scenes in the book, and I'm not giving anything away. And I thought, really, that sounds like a tall tale,
right,
to me. That's some storytelling going on. And I was researching something in Smyrna, because this all took place in Smyrna, Georgia, which is just north of Atlanta. And I was researching and come across an article for one of their history things that they had done, you know, the little festivals you have, in the early 80s. Where it really did happen, and they never caught, and they always said he never got caught. They never caught who did it.
Huh.
And I thought, okay, either he borrowed it from somebody or he really did pull this down. So those kind of stories are woven into this,
mm-hmm.
but it's about two brothers and the difference in these two brothers and how they don't get along, and it's about a girl, so it's kind of, think East of Eden meets Appalachia.
Okay. Very good. Well, do you have a short little passage you'd like to read?
Sure. Let's see. Let's not read too long. I'll just read the first couple of pages. How about that? Is that
okay.
Too long?
Yes. Great.
Let's go. The sound coming from the belly of Christ Deliverance Church was so loud, Buster was sure the congregation wouldn't hear nothing. The pure determination of the people floated on the hot, stale air. The preacher stood in the pulpit shaking his Bible, telling the crowd where sin would take them if they continued on their present path. Part of Buster had to respect those folks. It was 3:30 and none of them had eaten a bite since breakfast. That was called living off the Word of God. The small window in the attic of the church was the best way to get to the rafters without anyone noticing. He opened the flour sack and removed his great-grandpa's Civil War bugle, tucking it into his overalls. Larry, Buster's best friend since he could remember, pointed to the back of the church. Buster tossed the flour sack behind a bush. The two boys had caused plenty of trouble during their friendship, hiding a snake in old Mrs. Baker's desk, putting sugar in Mr. Plank's gas tank, howling like a ghost at Mrs. Tittle as she walked home at dusk, and driving Daddy's truck across the railroad trestle before the oncoming train reached them. But this time was the worst. They were messing with bona fide Bible-thumping Christians. Buster pulled himself into the old oak tree at the far end of the church. He and Larry were both acting like a couple of 10-year-olds, pulling that kind of crap when they were half-grown men. Mama was always telling him to act more like Lee, his older brother, who was 17 going on 40. And that very comment probably caused Buster to make the bad decisions he made. Shoot, he was 15 and a half. Why act like he was daddy? Larry followed him close on the limb that hung across the roof like a tightrope. Buster edged one foot in front of the other, arms spread like an eagle's wings. He could just make out the top of his house, sun glinting off the tin. They tried not to make too much noise when they dropped to the roof, but in all reality, they probably sounded like a couple of horses. Buster hurried across, Larry breathing down his neck. He took one more look in the direction he came from, as if he might run. Heat waves rippled in the air. He jumped onto the porch roof just below and scooted through the open window, where he settled in a V of two rafters directly over the congregation while Larry perched near the window. The preacher, sweat pouring down his face, eyes bulging like a bullfrog, arms like bean poles waving above his head, paced back and forth, shouting his message of repentance. Buster touched the brass bugle inside the overall bib. Mama would kill him for taking the thing. She had given it special to Lee. Mama would see what Buster did as stealing and would tell Daddy. That could be counted on. Sweat ran down Buster's face, too, dripping off his nose, running into his eyes. The Bible-toting souls wound themselves into the preacher's words like a spinning top. It was amazing just to watch them. The preacher went on for another 30 minutes before he drew a deep breath and began his altar call, placing himself close to the tall window for a little air. Now, good Christians, God has told me there are souls out there who need to be saved, be washed in the blood of the Lamb. He bowed his head while folks stirred in their places like restless cattle. Oh, Lord, I know you are speaking to the souls of these sinners. They are right here with us. I won't leave this place until they come before you, heart in hand. A man, straw hat held to his chest, and a woman holding onto the hand of a small boy pushed out of the pew into the aisle. Larry moved beside Buster as if he might fling himself on the mercy of the altar. The preacher raised his Bible in the air. Buster pulled out his bugle. Lord, don't let these souls go to hell. I've told them your plan for salvation. I've warned them of your coming in a twinkle of an eye. More people pushed out from their pews. Buster saw that the Allen girl from his class. She was left behind in her spot while folks moved around her. God, I'm waiting with no fear in my heart. I'm ready for you, for your return. Neighbors he knew, folks from his own church where Larry's daddy preached, began to pray with a rhythm like notes in a bad piece of music. Here it came, the best part. Buster placed the bugle to his lips. Lord, send your angel Gabriel with his horn to take us home.
Mm. That's great.
I can see that.
Oh.
Wow.
And that's supposedly my father-in-law.
Okay. Yeah. I got that character.
And since I found the other story, I'm thinking maybe that one would have been easier to pull off.
That's great. So talk about like a little bit about your writing process. Like, are you one of those that stay up all night writing, or do you do it in the morning, or is it here and there, or when you know?
I am a mom, And and now that I have my youngest at home is a senior in high school, so it's not so bad, but I also have grandchildren that come in and out. And I've just learned to write whenever I could write. Mm-hmm. I worked for BP Oil when I was writing Ghost on Black Mountain, and so every day at lunch hour, I would hide somewhere in somebody's office that had gone off to lunch and write for an hour, and that's how Ghost was written. Mm-hmm. The majority of Ghost was written. So pretty much I've learned to be flexible and write wherever. I might decide, I'll go when my oldest daughter's having rehearsal or something. I mean, my youngest daughter's having rehearsal or something. I'll go early and sit in the parking lot. And thank goodness for laptops. And right. And I do a lot of longhand. And just sit where it's quiet and write. And turn off the phone and write. Hmm. So I've just had to learn that what I think would be ideal would be in my dream world is to get up every morning and no one speaks to you. And you go into your office and no one speaks to you. And you have your coffee and you answer your emails for a minute, and then you have this long span of time that the muse visits you. And the times that I do have that, I don't know what to do. It's like, I really need to be doing this. It's like I do this up and down, and
yeah.
And it takes a while to settle down because I'm so used to just writing when I can, mm-hmm. that a structured way almost makes me not write. So that should give heart to people that write,
yeah.
that don't have a lot of time.
And those
you
busy,
can
do,
there's
yeah,
no excuse. Yeah, yeah, I've written all of mine while I was busy.
That's great. Well, Ann, thanks so much for coming by City Lights Bookstore. We're glad to have you.
Wonderful to be here. It's great.